This is Dr. Allie Evans welcoming you to Light on Health, a show where we shine the light on a full spectrum of topics that affect your health and that of our entire community. My guest today is Rebecca Orton. She is a local mom and a local doula who runs North Star Doula Service. And today we're going to be talking about, let's say, the laboring of motherhood. Welcome to the show, Rebecca. I'm happy to have you here.
Thanks, Allie.
Yeah. And I think before we get started, I just want to say to everyone listening, whether you are a mother, a biological mother, an adoptive mother, a father, a grandparent, a brother, a sister, really, I think the art of mothering as caretaking is very universal. So where we're going to specifically be talking about our experiences, which is being biological mothers, really, this is the idea of how we take care of others and ourselves. Yeah. So tell us a little bit, tell the listeners a little bit just about you and how you got into work, kind of specifically around mothering work and just your own personal life and being a mom.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I'm the youngest of eight. And I have, between my husband and I, about 34 nieces and nephews last time I counted.
So Christmas is a little bit difficult.
We've got it down to an art.
Perfect.
Yeah, there's an exchange thing that happens. But my first, I'm the youngest. And so I always had that desire to have a younger sibling because every youngest kid wants a younger sibling. And I got that when I turned eight and my brother had my first niece. And ever since then, I've always been a mother. I've always been chasing kids around, mothering them. And then when it came time to, when I got married and it had been a little while, we wanted to start having kids and then we couldn't. Mm. And we were actually, like so many times you've heard the story, I'm sure, halfway through the adoption process.
Yes.
When we found out we were pregnant and that baby was going to stay with us. I, before that time, had to decide, like, am I still going to be a mother if I don't have my own kids? And I had to have that really real moment of deciding, yeah, I can mother. I can mother other people's kids. I can mother my friends' kids. I can mother my friends.
And yourself, right?
Sure.
Like the parts of ourselves that we
Absolutely.
Have to mother day in, day out, and we just don't label it as that.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I had my own kids, and through the course of some educational pursuits, became a doula. And it's just trained mothering.
Yes.
Is what it is. It's mothering
and for any,
the mother.
Will you just let our listeners know, for anyone who doesn't know what a doula is, just the gist of what that work entails?
Sure. A doula is a specifically trained person to provide informational, emotional, and physical support before, during, and after childbirth. It's all non-clinical. There's no baby catching. It's just all that additional support that people require outside of the medical scope.
Yes. And it's interesting, I think that idea of our identity, if we're not able to have a child on our own, or if we choose not to have a child on our own, or whether we're a gender we identify with that's different from our biological gender that doesn't allow us to have a child, it doesn't preclude that experiencing of motherhood at all, you know?
It doesn't.
Yeah. And so that conversation you were having about what would my identity be like as a woman if I'm not able, if I'm adopting and not having my own biological child? Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
And now you have, how many children do you have?
Three,
yes.
Three biological children.
Yeah. Which was, and what are their
kind
ages?
Kind of a shocker, really. They're 6, 3, and 5 months.
Yep.
Today.
Oh,
five
yeah.
5 months today.
Happy 5 months.
Thank you.
So one of the things that I came across, well, one of the things I wanted to say, I had looked up the definition of mothering just because I was thinking I want this show to be universal to all of our listeners. And interestingly, the definition's to bring up with care and affection, to nurture and protect. And I thought, gosh, that's so, that's really specific. And some moms really can't do that. And some people mothering really can't do that.
Why do you think that is?
I mean, I think that to be able to nurture someone else requires us to nurture ourselves first, right? Like that idea of the tank being full, you know, or putting your oxygen mask on before you
fill someone else's cup out of an empty cup.
Out of an empty cup. Yeah, that's a great analogy. And I just think even in the definition embedded in that idea, it asks a lot of self-care, self-love, self-restoration, filling up our own cup, you know.
And part of that cup, in fairness, I feel like part of that cup gets full through serving others.
Yeah.
But there also has to be a time where you take a step back and take stock of what you need and where you're at and give honor to that, even if you can't fix it.
Yes. Yeah. And that, yeah, that's a, that thought is right on. And the idea too of being okay where we're at, you know, in that balance of giving and receiving, finding a peace in each moment, because that balance is always going to be a little bit off, right? Sometimes we're giving way more than we're receiving, and other times we're unable and we just sit and receive and then feel guilty about receiving.
Hopefully we don't feel guilty, because being the giver, sometimes you don't want that person to feel guilty that's receiving. We do so much to ourselves.
Yes. Well, and what did you say to me? We were chatting before the program, and we were saying what we hold ourselves to as
women. We would never ask someone else to do what we ask ourselves to do.
Right. Can you imagine, like, even if you were an employer hiring an employee and saying, here's your job description, and giving them a job description of what we expect of ourselves as individuals in this society.
And we're not going to pay you.
That's right.
By the way,
you'll get your reward in smiles from your children
and hugs and kisses between the tantrums and the dirty diapers.
That's right.
That sounds great.
And the time that your kid decides to share at the playground, that'll be the reward.
Yeah, sign me up.
So in thinking about this show, I started thinking about mothering and mindfulness, because I think whether we're talking about mothering our children or mothering ourselves or caretaking others, this idea of mindfulness and being present kind of was interesting to me. So I want to just kind of bounce off of each other. There's seven attributes of mindfulness. And I want to kind of bounce off these ideas in relation to motherhood and nurturing and self-care. So the first attribute of mindfulness is non-judging. So that curiosity, that observation without judgment attached to it, just this is what is kind of a thing. And I don't know for you, I know for me as a mother, that's really challenging for me. I have stories behind, you know, my child is doing this, or I am doing this, and this is what meaning I ascribe to it. You know, this is what meaning I think this means. Is that something, have you experienced that both as a mom and just a...
On the daily.
Yeah. Like
that's the story of my entire day.
Yes.
It's constantly trying to separate the way that I was raised from the way that I'm raising my children and the people that they are and the people I want them to become, but the people that they will inevitably become, which is like better than what I would want them to become. It's so this constant storm in my mind of all of these different expectations, and in the rare moment that I can get those all to hush, I really genuinely like my kids.
Yeah.
Rather than just trying to constantly mold, you know,
that's
something
right.
that you really can't mold that much.
There's a Buddhist teacher, lecturer, therapist, Jon Kabat-Zinn. And he wrote this book, I think it's called The Mindfulness of Parenting or something of that sort. But one part really sticks out to me where he said, and you've probably heard me say this before, but he says, our job as a parent or as a friend to someone, anytime you're supporting someone, our job is to allow them to be the flower they're meant to be, like the seed that they were planting. So for example, if they're meant to be a lily in this world, our job is to provide all the soil amendments and the proper amount of water for them to be that lily, but not try to change them into a rose.
Wow.
And, you know, for me, I just kept seeing all the ways that I'd show up trying to change my kids into the rose I thought they should be instead of honoring this lily that they are, or, you know, each child's unique. But, and how much effort that is. I mean, could you imagine going out to your garden and like trying to will a tomato into a kale plant? Like, that's not nature.
Well, it would be laughable.
Yeah. So The second attribute is patience. And patience, obviously, in the sense of taking a step back, but also think includes that acceptance of what is without agenda. Letting things unfold in their own innate timing. The way a chrysalis needs its perfect amount of time before the caterpillar can become a butterfly. And I know, especially with parenting, that can be one of the most frustrating, just watching, you know, someone you're caretaking or your child be in a stage where they need to be there developmentally, but we're like, can we push this along already?
Could you just please be 5 and then 16 and then 30, please?
Yeah, especially in the day in, day out of it.
Yep.
And I think also for ourselves, having that trust in the nature of time, like similar to making a lily become a rose, we can't make a chrysalis move any faster. We can't do anything to change that nature of time. And gosh, what wasted effort. Like all that energy spent trying to change something. Yeah, that's...
Yeah. You know, I like your analogy about the lily and the rose. And I think it's important to recognize that our children aren't weeds.
Right.
They are beautiful flowers. And that doesn't preclude our responsibility to weed the garden.
Right.
And to water and to nurture.
That's right.
Because there's things that I will protect my children from, and I don't consider those bad things to, you know, trying to change a rose or a lily into a rose.
Right. Right.
I think we still have the responsibility to nurture what that is, but also to recognize, like, they're already those things.
Exactly.
They're already these beautiful flowers that are ready to go.
Yes. What do you do personally? Or do any ideas come to mind? I'm especially thinking about this idea of patience with labor and birth, where labor is a process of patience. Like you, same thing, it's a chrysalis. You can't force it to happen quicker. We can do some medical interventions to try to speed things up.
We should try sometimes, yeah. Don't we?
Yeah. But, you know, I guess how does anything come to mind in how you counsel your clients, your doula clients, or that idea of how we bring patience in, or that surrender to the innate timing of things?
Sure. Yeah, that comes up. And I think that over the years that I've done it, the thing that has been most helpful is that prenatal conversation, where I try to throw in there that my record birth was 18 minutes.
Yeah.
That I showed up, and she had been laboring but just didn't know it because she was, some people are like that.
Yeah.
And then my other record was 52 hours
of
just hands-on, face-to-face support. And we had the same conversation beforehand that some births are really fast and some are really slow, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Oftentimes it just takes a really long time, and it doesn't mean anything is wrong.
Right.
And then there's a sort of a shadow of that comes up during labor, because a lot of times a client will look at me and say, like, why is this going so slow? And then I'll give her a reminder just with my facial cues, like, we talked about this. Nothing is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It just takes a minute.
Right.
And then you can see them relax when they just are simply reminded to trust that experience.
Right.
Like, oh, no, it's okay. I'm good. I don't need anything. I'm just going to take a nap or continue to cope.
And going back, I think, to that space of non-judgment again. Yes, this is long. Oh, how curious. What an interesting just observing and being with the observation instead of ascribing a good or bad to it, right?
Yeah. And even when we try to fit people in these statistical boxes, like, oh, yes, you are laboring longer than many women. Interesting.
Exactly.
As it would turn out, nothing is wrong, unless, of course, something is wrong.
Sure.
But usually nothing is wrong.
Right. Yeah. Something, the third principle that I love is this idea of a beginner's mind. And I think this is such a beautiful idea with children in general. Like, you look at children who are, you know, developing and having this mind that's sort of just seeing with fresh eyes and observing the world with these fresh eyes. Again, not subscribing a good, bad, a judgment, but just this eyes wide open, like a newborn's eyes observing the extraordinariness of life in the ordinary.
Right.
And if we could like glean that from our children and glean that, whether they're your children or not, from kids you see in strollers at the playground, in shopping carts at the store, if we could take a little bit of that kind of energy, you know?
I think it would make it a lot harder to get so angry with my kids.
Right?
If I'm honest, I do.
Absolutely.
But it's like going into a medical environment without ever having been in a medical environment before.
Yes.
And the doctors and the nurses and the support staff and everybody, they all know the same vocabulary.
Yes.
And it's normal to them. And then you walk into a hospital and someone starts shouting all of this medical terminology. You have no idea what they're talking about.
Absolutely.
And so you ask for a little bit of patience. And what does that word mean? And what is that? And it's no different with your kids. They just often, this is their first exposure to English.
It's a whole new world.
There's tons of words they don't know and tons of things they don't, you know, my 3-year-old son spent a few minutes pushing on a door that said pull because he can't read. And instead of getting frustrated like I do, you know, what if I just realized maybe he doesn't know what this says?
That's right.
Because,
right when you're like, go already.
Yeah, just go. Up and get through the door. It's not that hard. It's a door. And he's like, Mom, I'm 3.
That's right.
But he can't say that. He doesn't have my reason. So.
And I think of it also for ourselves, even as adults. What is it, you know, you think about, like, for example, getting hired for a new job that's brand new to you and you don't have the skill set, but you're very capable. We feel so, I think we as adults feel so, we don't like that feeling of incompetence. We label it as incompetence. It is incompetence.
As though it were a bad thing.
As if it were a bad thing, exactly. And really, it's, can we approach this with a beginner's mind, knowing this is extraordinary. Look at this newness and have that excitement like a kid would have for going to the beach for the first time. But I think we've been kind of ingrained as adults to ascribe this judgment to it where that we're not good enough. We're not smart enough.
We feel obligated to hide our ignorance.
Yes.
Which then comes off as being conceited.
Yeah.
Which is really ironic.
The overcompensatory know-it-all. Yeah.
Because we don't want people to know how little we know because somewhere along the line we said that it was bad.
That's
to
right.
To not know.
That's right.
Rather than good. Which it is.
And I see that even, you know, I look at, like, I have a middle schooler, you know, trying out a new sport. And I'm thinking as the mom to myself, of course you won't be good on day one. This is new. Like, you get to go through this journey of learning what this sport means to you and how you do with it and overcoming the challenges. Mm-hmm. But do I say the same thing to myself in a situation where something's very new? No, I'm way harder on myself. You know, it's way more judgment and way more, and sometimes not even stepping up to that opportunity because it just means incompetence. You know, it means I have to be uncomfortable because I feel incompetent.
It's like preemptive failing.
Exactly. Yeah.
We fail ourselves before anyone gets the chance to fail us. So we can say it. It's okay if we say it.
That's right. Yeah. So I think maybe that lesson of, like, what would it be like to just go about for a couple minutes each day, you know, with that beginner's eyes, those eyes wide open for the first time. Without the judgment.
Yeah. And to say to ourselves, I'm giving it my level best.
Yeah.
And if we're not, to say, I'm not giving this my level best.
And that's
there's
okay
some beauty
too.
In that honesty.
Yeah. Which is one of the, I'll jump ahead to the, so one of the other, which is exactly what you're saying, attributes of mindfulness is acceptance. And it's not saying, what's the word? I resign myself to this. It's saying
it
I see
try.
Clearly what it. Yeah, exactly. It doesn't mean to give up or resign. It means I see clearly what is, and that's okay, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not giving it my best, and I see that, and that's okay. And then you decide what you want to do with that. But this acceptance of what reality, what it is, without wasting all that time pushing away or denying or suppressing, because that all takes energy that we'd all rather be doing something else.
Sure. It's a massive disservice that we do to ourselves.
Yes. And do you see that idea of acceptance? I have seen this in the births that I've attended, where you often see a shift where a woman will be sort of fighting the process of labor internally. Like, am I doing this right? Is there something wrong?
Because there's a right.
Yes.
Somehow along the line, we adopted that one too.
Yes. And then you often see the shift where it goes into a moment of acceptance of just, okay, this is what it is. I've seen it especially in relation to labor that goes into a cesarean section. That's where really there's a peace too. Around it. It's a, you know, it might be the woman's worst fear going into labor that it's going to turn out to have to be surgical. Mm-hmm. And then there's this moment of acceptance without judgment often where, and that's not to say everyone does this, but just I have observed where it goes into this space of it is what it is. And I'm not going to fight it with it ought to be this way. I should have done this, but just accept these are the cards that are dealt on the table right now.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think it's what that brings to my mind, at least, is I've met many women who have been through multiple births.
Yeah.
And they've had traumatic births and not traumatic births.
Yeah.
One in specific comes to my mind. And this person had had this really difficult C-section, and she felt that she had failed, and she had felt that she was like kind of coerced into it, and that her body was broken, and that her baby was broken, that everything was broken, and because it had all just happened to her.
Yeah.
And then the second time around, she hired a doula, and it doesn't have to be a doula. Doula is not right for everybody. That's not what I'm after. But that she had support. She had this mother figure.
Yes.
And on paper, if you look at maybe the doctor's notes, same thing happened mm-hmm. the second time. And then when they were debriefing afterwards,
yeah,
this person said, my second birth was healing from my first birth. On paper, it was the
looks
same.
Looks the exact same, yeah.
But it was that somebody had to be there,
yeah.
in her case,
yeah.
to allow her to see the process, be honest about the process, say this could happen, and if it does, then it will.
Right.
And that's all you can say about it, really.
Yes.
And then, but just the idea that she needed to be given permission.
That's right.
To be okay with what was happening. And but then she was.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be very healing, not just for that experience, but for her first birth. It was troublesome.
That's right. And I think that acceptance also allows us to take that next step, which is also one of another principle of mindfulness, which is letting go, where we accept what is and we're able to let go again, not resign ourselves, but stop striving and pushing so hard and surrender to what the universe is bringing in the moment.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that makes an experience so beautiful.
There's, I think one of my guests on my show at some point mentioned this this idea in relation to letting go, but I just love this image. So there's have you heard this analogy of like the monkey and the banana? So there's a glass jar and the jar has like a narrow top. You've probably heard this.
I heard it in Herschel and the Hanukkah Goblins.
Yeah, there you go. So there's a monkey whose hand is stuck in the jar because the monkey is holding on to a banana. And so holding on to this banana, the monkey can't take his hand out of the jar with the banana in hand. And when the monkey finally, the monkey's hand will just be stuck. But if the monkey finally decides to let go of the banana, the hand just can totally come out of the jar. Mm-hmm. And I think like, wow, how much of parenting of both myself and my children have I spent holding onto that banana with my hand in the jar, you know, just unwilling to let go of what I really can't control or let go of expectations, like you said so aptly in the beginning, that are just more than we would ever put on anyone in the universe besides ourselves. You know, just trying to be this like, can we do 85 things at once? And if 10 of those things on the list don't get done, you know, can we let go? Or are we just going to keep our hands stuck in this jar holding a banana?
I guess it's up to you.
Yeah.
Enjoy your banana. That's if you right. want.
You don't even get to eat it. You can't get it out of the jar. The other, I'll mention the other few attributes of mindfulness. One is trust. So just a deep trust in ourself and our feelings. Without the desire to change who we are, which I think goes back to that analogy of like the flowers and trying to change us into things, you know, trying to change our children. But something that that brings up for me too, which you and I were kind of chatting about before the show, is when we're supporting others, when we're mothers and we're, you know, we have our children and we need some support, or vice versa, we have friends that have children and we're trying to support them, how we show up and how we honor who they are. Like you were telling me a beautiful story of a friend showing up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was when I was just freshly postpartum, and it's when you have a baby, the dial on life, just everything turns up to a 10. Your emotions are a 10. Your mess is a 10. Just everything is a 10.
Yes.
And we had just had a ton more house guests than we should have had.
Yeah.
And I had a massive laundry pile on my bed, and I think that my husband was taking care of my kids in the other room. I don't even know if they were home, but I was laying somewhere near this laundry pile, and my room was a mess, and I'm sure my house was a mess. I don't recall if I had showered. And I was holding my baby, and my dear, dear friend comes in so quietly. She put a vase of flowers on the table, a loaf of fresh bread, and put some cheese in the fridge, which all that means is that she knows me. And then she came into my room so softly and crawled up on my bed and laid in my laundry pile with me. And she just started stroking my baby's face and cooing and being soft and saying, how were things? How did it go? What do you want to tell me? And it was so, after all of that frenetic just chaos of having so many loving people, but so many people, to have this person who heard the symphony of my life and made harmonizing chords rather than just coming in banging a drum.
Yeah.
And that drum fits somewhere, but it wasn't there.
Yeah.
And she just came in. She didn't have to do my laundry. She didn't have to clean my floors. She just was there.
Yeah.
And she heard me. It was so huge and so helpful. And it changed the way that I approach even my clients and my family and friends when they're in that vulnerable state.
Yeah. And it makes me think about how we approach ourselves in that state. Like if we put ourselves in that position of we're walking into that bedroom to take care of our own parts and our own inner being, having the intuition and I guess guidance and wisdom to know, do I need to take action steps right now, or do I need to like softly lay down on this pile of clothes and just be, you know, or show up in a really calm presence?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What could have been a really chaotic and kind of embarrassing moment turned into a really precious memory to me.
Yes.
Because everybody has a laundry pile once in a while.
Absolutely. You
know? But that moment was made almost sacred to me because it was seen for everything that it was and just loved and respected.
Right, yeah, there. Without trying to change it.
Nope.
It wasn't about let's clean
and
off this laundry.
I didn't need someone to do my laundry just
That's
then.
Right. So just for sake of completion, I'll name the 7 attributes, and you guys, the listeners, can look this up anywhere. It's like the very common attributes of mindfulness, but just to review, it's not non-judging, patience, having a beginner's mind, trust, non-striving. We didn't talk about that, but that meaning putting effort and energy into getting somewhere or getting something, but really just kind of backing off and the surrender and letting go. Acceptance and letting go. So taking that and seeing what we can all do with that for both ourselves, our parenting of ourselves, our self-care, which I think this in and of itself is an entire life's journey. But if we could just riddle a little bit of that into each day.
We owe it to ourselves.
We do. Gosh.
Because if we feel that we owe that to other people, again, with the glass, you can't pour out something that isn't there.
That's right. So if people are interested in getting in touch with you about doula services or finding out more, is there a good place for them to go find your website? Or?
Sure. They could go to northstardoula.com or look on Facebook. Or
okay.
If you Google doulas in Astoria, I think we might be the only ones that come up.
Okay, great. So sure. North Star Doula Service or Google it on Facebook. Well, thank you so much, Rebecca, for being on the show.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
And thank you to all my listeners. I was speaking with Rebecca Orton talking about mothering both ourselves and others. You've been listening to Light on Health on Coast Community Radio. Very special thank you to Joanne Rideout for engineering. It's my hope that we have enlightened and empowered you to take one tiny step forward towards your own radiant health.
You've been listening to Light on Health on Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria, 91.9 FM, KTCB Tillamook, 89.5 FM. Streaming live at coastradio.org. Hear us on your mobile device using the free TuneIn app. We have headline news coming up at 10:01, and then Jerry Middaugh is in the house for Tuesday Folk. He'll take you up to the noon hour when we'll have fresh air. Quick look at the weather, sunny with a high in the mid-70s. Tonight, more clouds, low in the mid-50s. Stay tuned, and thank you to everyone who supported us during our recent pledge drive last week. You're great. We love you. Thanks so much for your support.